Craig Jackson Show.
Real people, real business, real estate.
The Craig Jackson Show.
Real people, real business, real estate.
The Craig Jackson Show.
Real people, real business, real estate.
The Craig Jackson Show.
Real people, real business, real estate.
Yeah, what's up, people? It is the Craig Jackson Show. I am Pat Hilton. You can follow me at The Acoustic Force. We got Craig Jackson. Follow him at The Real Craig Jackson. And today, we're going to talk a little bit about Craig's background. So Craig was talking to me a little bit about, you know, his book that he's going to be writing. You're writing a book, right?
Absolutely.
So there's a book coming. We've got this podcast going. We've got Instagram and Facebook that we're boosting and YouTube that we're putting content on. And it's an awesome experience for me because I get to grow a whole lot by being a part of this. And we're going to have some incredible guests on the show. We're growing so much as a result of this and using the tools and the resources that we have to put the word out about our goals and our journey and our future successes that we're looking at. And by the way, I got my own little studio room now. I'm not in California anymore. I packed up my family and moved to Texas because I do what I want. And that all goes back into what we talk about with the freedom of entrepreneurship. We got into this because we wanted to be able to make decisions that we wanted to make when we needed to make them. And not have to hesitate, not have to wait, not have to be in any kind of situation that we weren't happy or uncomfortable or we couldn't be ourselves, and do what's best for us, do what's best for our family, do what's best for our future in business and all of that stuff. And so here we are.
That's it.
So why don't you start telling the people about your background, where you came from, how you came up. I know we've talked about it off camera a lot, and you're pretty honest on Facebook too. I don't know if you guys follow Craig, but he is very savagely honest, and that's hard to do on social media sometimes for people. It's very easy to show you the highlight reel and show you, you know, me playing at the bar and singing at the bar. And I try to share a lot of my losses too, because I mean, it's been a hard road for me as a musician and an artist and an entertainer and a producer, and all of these things have now kind of merged where I'm working with business owners and with businesses to help them advertise and market and promote their live events. And I'm performing at their live events. And that's exactly how we met. So give the people a little background.
You know, just to kind of touch base on what you just said too, just to clarify, you know, I know that there is a lot of highlight reel activity out there, and, you know, in many cases, I think more than the latter, I think that the highlight reel is what we've been structured to think is the best format to bring in new business. So I think I speak for me and you that, you know, we're not knocking that process per se.
No,
we're just more or less asking us all as individuals just kind of maybe reach a bit deeper and you know, seek out you know, maybe a greater understanding, seek out you know, what it would feel like to just kind of be open and not have to kind of build these you know, these invisible walls. You know, I know for me and for Pat, you know, we're, like you said, Pat, we've kind of practiced transparency. And I don't know about you, but I get a lot of relation from that. I get a lot, whether it's you and us just having a phone call or an inbox of someone saying, hey, man, you know, I appreciate you saying you had a shitty day because, hey, I did too. And then, you know, we're able to actually talk and have an adult conversation about how we get through those things. And then you kind of help elevate one another.
Oh,
you know, I like that part of it.
Dude, and since we started doing this, I mean, I've had a huge mental comeback from some just personal stuff I was dealing with. You know, I pushed so hard out in California for so long because that's what I wanted at the time. And I've lived in a lot of different places. I'm from St. Louis. I moved to Arizona for college. When I graduated college, I moved to Las Vegas. And what I wanted at that time was to work for a corporate audio company, the biggest shows in the world. I did that. Then I moved back home to St. Louis and started my own company. Then that led me to move into San Diego. And I thought that was the, every one of these things I thought was the end all be all. And then I moved from San Diego up north. I thought having the facility and the stage and the Bay Area thing was going to be it. And it's just like, I wasn't happy. The overhead was outrageous. And I packed up and I moved to Texas, which I'm looking around now and it's literally the best thing I've ever done because that's where so many of my fans are. And I feel like they've been beating me over the head with, this is the place for you. This is the place for you. This is the place for you. And I wanted in my head this vision of success that wasn't the actual vision of success that I needed to be chasing. And so here we are.
And that's part of going through that process. You didn't go around it. You didn't go over it. You went right through it.
Right. I jumped right in.
You learned through the process that, hey, this is not the right setting. It doesn't mean you don't love Cali. It doesn't mean you don't love, I'm sure, tons of friendships.
Absolutely.
Business relationships you built there. But it led you to a mental understanding of the exact decision to make next.
Exactly.
And that's why it's so important to really go through these things, you know, and, you know, at least for me, for sure. And like you
totally.
Said, so many times I've been in a place where I think, okay, this is it. You know, this is
right.
This is it. And then
end all be all.
Completely different path. Yeah.
So tell people where you started from. Are you from Nashville?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Born and raised, East Nashville. Proudly so. I remember being a young kid and just, you know, I'm sure a bunch of the local Nashvillians can relate. I know I used to think, man, I wish we had a lot of times kids are into sports and things like that. And I always remember, man, I wish we had a team and that'd be so neat for us. You know, and this is a young kid and just thinking, you know, Nashville, wish we could grow. It seems at times Nashville seemed a bit slow, a bit, you know, maybe behind the times, you know,
like not as progressive.
80s. Yeah. Just, you know, and this late 80s, early 90s, you know, as I'm just getting into my teens, but at that time, that's when you're kind of just learning to analyze the outside world outside your own little circle there. And it's super exciting to see what's happening here and be a part of it. And there's a lot of growth, but in a positive manner. And I think Nashville's on a continued trajectory of a lot of positive things.
Absolutely. And that's why I use the word progressive, because Nashville is always on those lists of places that are listed for huge expansion for, I mean, didn't you guys just get a MLS team, soccer team?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So you got this big stadium coming. I mean, the Nashville Predators now, I mean, there's a lot going on there that wasn't, like you said, when I was a kid, when we were growing up, it was a little bit more like a Midwest. It's just blown up. It was way more.
Yeah.
It's way more of a hub now than it was when we were kids.
As a kid, I felt like we were still stuck in the horse and buggy mode, but you know, figuratively speaking. And so they're actually says we're getting the biggest MLS stadium in the country.
Wow.
There's, you know, continued talks of, you know, we got a new sound stadium. You know, Titans are doing well. We had the biggest draft turnout, I believe, in history. Fun stuff, man. Really exciting, and it's crazy. And I'm really only saying that to say this: God's timing is perfect, and I mean that with every aspect of who I am. So I grew up in East Nashville. You know, my dad left probably when I was around 6 months. Him and my mom split. I say she got pregnant at 19, I believe. So probably 20 and a half, 21 years old, and they got married young when they got pregnant, and then he moved to Jacksonville. Didn't see him again until I was around 13. He came around. My mom was young. she was wild. There was, you know, a lot of growing up for her to do. And my grandparents ended up getting full custody. And then about 13, my dad kind of, my mom would be around and be local, but move around a lot. And sometimes I wouldn't hear from her for several months. And then, you know, she'd come back, but she's grown a ton. I know that, you know, that's not easy for anyone to hear, but, you know, I just want to share my truth that it might help someone.
Absolutely.
And, you know, then he came back around when I was about 13. At that time, you know, I'm pretty stubborn. I'm like, well, you know, I don't have time for you. You know, you haven't had time. And that was kind of my mental thought process there. And, he came back one other time, like the same summer. This was probably maybe spring, April. And then that second visit was maybe a month and a half later. He introduced me. He said, Craig, this is my two sons, which was my half brothers. You know, I remember that impacting me pretty heavy, just, you know, that I wasn't introduced as a son, but these are the two sons. And then, and he left, and pretty much, we spent, I don't know, 2-3 phone calls. And he was telling me, hey, I'm going to come pick you up for the summer. You know, Colt and Shane they're racing dune buggies, da, da, da. They lived in Spring Hill, Tennessee at this point. Which is, I think, a couple hours outside of Nashville.
Nice.
And, you know, I'm going to come back, da-da-da. We're gonna spend the whole summer. I remember being excited, running in, tell Papaw, you know, he's really upset. And at that age, I remember my whole youth just thinking my granddad was just an asshole because he always had this outlook against him and certain scenarios. And what it was, he was really just protecting my best interest. And, that phone call happened. I was super excited, and I didn't hear from him again for 4 or 5 years, or
Damn.
4 years. Yeah, I was 17, and he came around. He stayed one night. He gave me a gun. You know, da 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 da. You know, here's a gift for your troubles. Me and my mom had she purchased or financed a trailer that was going to be bought. My grandparents signed for that. Moved it into a park, and he had come visited that night. I woke up, basically, you know, he was gone the next morning, you know, no conversation, no bye, see you later. And haven't seen him in person since. And then, you know, he's still, from what I understand, I think we're even Facebook friends. I accepted it maybe 4 or 5 years back. And then, but from what I understand, I think he's still Spring Hill, Tennessee, or, just not, we don't communicate. So that's that. And then, spent a lot of time with my grandparents. I moved back with my mom as I got older, like 7 and 8. My mom was still probably pretty active in, you know, the wrong lifestyles, picking the wrong individuals. It says I got a poor connection, so if I'm lagging, I'm sorry.
It's all good.
I'm a little bit out in the country here, so the internet does great when it does, and then sometimes it has glitches.
That's no big deal.
I would move in, there would be fights. I remember actually being 3 and a half. My mom's sister had toxic shock syndrome. She went from being 110 pounds to like 180 pounds overnight. She almost died. Spent about 6 months in the hospital. She died 3 times on the table when she got to the hospital trying to save her. Spent about 6 months between the initial and then rehabilitation, learning how to walk, talk, all those things again. We spent a lot of time at the hospital. I remember being like 4, and a lot of people don't remember that age. They say sometimes traumatic memories will kind of stick with you and you can remember younger years of your life. And I remember like racing my aunt around in the wheelchair and thinking, you know, we played like, I thought it was like a little race car I was driving for.
Right.
I remember a lot of visits there. And the guy my mom was dating, I mean, they were both, you know, abusive to each other. And there was several incidences where I basically had to get a chair, slide it up to the wall, call my grandparents, they come get me. That started, you know, spiraling out of control pretty bad. It got pretty abusive. My mom, one night, basically, they used to have the canister vacuums with the long metal post on it. Now they're made of plastic. That was used to beat her upside the head to the point you know, she was almost unconscious and cops got called. And I, like I said, I was about 3.5, 4 then. And, but that's I kept trying. He threw, before that house, he had an apartment when they first started dating. He threw off a second story balcony, broad daylight. I remember the sound of her body hitting the ground and thinking, you know, that she might not be okay, but she's tough. And so we go on a few years, and then there was other boyfriends, same thing. I remember being eight, playing baseball. Good guy. He was good to me. Probably the best father example besides my granddad that my mom had chose, Jimmy. And,
okay.
Ended up, you know, coming in one day, and he's choking her on the bed. She's purple. I pick up the bat. I'm eight and a half. And I told him, first cuss word, I told him, I said, if you don't let go of my mom, I'm going to break your fucking neck with this baseball bat.
Oh, my gosh.
He let go. Then he was crying. Me and him were close. He took me to my baseball games, things like that. And, you know, got me a bike, different things. But so
was there substance abuse involved with any of this? Just as an outside question. Okay, just wondering. Just asking.
Absolutely. A lot. A lot of that. A lot of partying. You know, just being wild. My mom was a 70s, you know, kid. Right. And that's not valid or an excuse.
No.
But it was right in that time where a lot of the kids didn't even have, at least we got some awareness going on. It's like, we got people saying, hey, don't do this. But back then it was more kind of just an open thing where a lot of, even the parents were participating.
Well, and it, like we've talked about, you know, people that we follow in the success realm, and, you know, we know how some of that stuff works now, but
yep.
The internet wasn't available back then. The information age, the golden age of information and sharing and communication, it wasn't the 70s.
Right, right. Absolutely. It was just, you know, love, sex, and drugs. And then they paid the consequences on a lot of cases. And in some sad cases, I'm sure, you know, there's a lot worse stories, but some of the kids, you know, that were born out of that offspring paid some of the consequences. Luckily, I was blessed with some really stable and good grandparents. After that, I was about 8.5, and I'm shortening a lot of this, but, you know, basically from about 8.5 to probably 13, I kind of stayed with Grandpapa. That was about the time my father came around, or my donor came around, and I think it kind of triggered me. I think I was doing okay. I remember doing pretty decent in school, things like that. That's when I started using drugs, smoking pot.
When, you know, what age? Pot,
you know, just continuing that process. You know what I mean?
What age do you think that was?
13. By 13, I was, you know, selling pot on the regular. I had gotten robbed at gunpoint by some adult men that were actually some friends of my mom that I got introduced to, and you know, got a pistol pulled and chain snatched, and yeah, it was, you know, you're young, man. That's pretty young. And
that is pretty young. I was gonna say that is pretty young to be in that game.
I you know, you're not ready. You just think it's just money and it's all happiness, and it's totally not like that. There was a guy we hung around about that time where my mom would visit often. It was a separate boyfriend, and, you know, they were smoking pot with us, and, you know, I was given LSD at 13, you know, watching the Christmas tree twinkle and thinking it was fun and thinking it was cool. And, you know, those things aren't cool. It's mind altering, and you're trying to mature, and you're trying to understand life, and you're trying to understand just how to be an adult, or yeah, how to do life, you know?
Yeah. That is a young
about that. I was just
influence on that shit. Big time.
Yeah, buddy. Yes, sir. Yeah. And there was just a guy, I was just throwing this in there. There was a guy that we just hung around, and he grew, you know, pot, and had several, like, 20, 30 plants that were hanging upside down. And really cool guy. And we were at a party, and a buddy of mine, we went with my mom and one of my friends, and then they would let us drink. And you know, a couple months later, you know, you just, Nick got robbed and murdered, and you know, da da da, and you know, you don't see that side. You just see, okay, we can sell a bag or two, and we'll make a little money. I can have some shoes and da da da. So, anyways, that kind of progressed. My schooling went down terribly. Sixth grade, I was accepted into Martin Luther King Magnet, which is a pretty prestigious school here in Nashville, Tennessee.
That's good.
You know, we were doing like 9th and 10th grade work in my 7th grade year.
Wow.
And just kind of screwed that up. There were some terrific people. There's friends that are on my Facebook. They watched some of that transpire that are still friends now that I went to school with there. And kind of flunked out my 7th grade year. The 8th grade year, they had like 40 people that all of a sudden they called over the mic. It was probably like the first report card or maybe second end of the year. And they called everybody in the school that was basically flunking out. And it was me and one other kid and the principal.
Damn.
My grandmother was sitting there and the principal said, we're only going to give you and that other kid a chance to stay. If you want to put in the work, you want to make the effort, we believe you have the potential. And I looked at my grandmother and at that time I was ready to hustle. I was ready to just be around the people that I made money with. And I said, I wouldn't want to go to my own school. My grandmother kicked me under the table and about broke my shin. And then she started crying. And yeah, I didn't understand. I didn't care. And
right.
And so anyway, so we, you know, go down a little bit. I go back to my own school. Some continued stuff there. Eighth grade, I passed. It was just regular, you know, East High, East Middle. Got accepted into East Literature Magnet. It was the first year it was put together. My academics met those standards right there. My ninth grade, I did well. I had some dedication. Coming into 10th grade, I was pretty heavy, active in everything else at that point on a day-to-day basis. And got in some trouble. The teacher, you know, said that they thought I said that that I was going to burn her house down. I ended up going to the school board.
Oh,
they put
no.
me they put me out of school. And the reason was
I mean,
didn't
I
know
probably
this,
said
like,
shit like that too, but I probably didn't get caught
what
that time.
Was this other kid that's on my Facebook? I'm not going to say his name. He said, yeah, we'll just burn Miss Seabold's house down. And I looked at him and I said, man, you're an idiot, dude. You're not going to burn her house down. But because I was always the class clown, she immediately snatched her neck and looked at me. I was like, I heard that, Craig.
I used to get in trouble for stuff like that, too, just because I was louder than everybody else.
I was always in trouble. I just didn't say that.
There could be 6 or 7 assholes in a class that did something first.
Yeah.
But I did it louder the 8th time, and I was the one that got sent to Mr. Barr's office. It was bullshit.
Well, here's the thing. So we get to the school board, and the whole time I didn't know. And the school board basically is like, do you realize Miss Seaball? So what she did was she housed a bunch of handicapped folks. So like she held a special home where
she freaked out.
The state let her keep different like 10 or 12 people. She had a humongous
of course.
House. And so they took it way serious. And so I got expelled out of school, failed out. Yeah, and I've done it. That was my karma. I didn't do that event, but that was my karma, I'm sure.
Right.
Went back to my zone school, Maplewood. Did about a half a year there. Ended up cussing out the principal and got kicked out. Completely quit school. I got home. The next morning, my granddad was always at work, like clockwork. I noticed his truck was outside. I was like, you know, it's later in the day, and I look at the clock. It's like 9:30, 10 a.m. I walk outside. He's on the deck. He's on the phone. He gets off the phone. He says, you think you're going to be a man, then you're going to be a man. You're going to get a job. I'm going to sign you out of school, and you're going to get homeschooled, and you're going to get a full-time job. Within about a week and a half, I got a job at BV's Burger Joint. I was trading food for drugs for all my older homeboys that were around that area. And I mean, it's, you know, I can look back and laugh now. But,
well, of course. Of course.
during that time, you know, there was multiple times my grandparents, John Casablanca, which was a little modeling school, and it doesn't mean that it's legit, but they're an agency. They go to high schools, and my grandmother even tried to do that when I was at Maplewood. She signed me up, went and moved with my mom in Antioch again, you know, some chaos there, and then I flipped her car one night in the rain and flipped it upside down, hydroplane. About a month later, I was with some friends. Rodney, God bless his soul, he passed away, and we were in a car wreck. Actually, two of the guys in the car, Josh Morsey, is no longer with us as well. He passed away a couple years back, and we were flying, going like 65 and a 35, pouring rain, smacked the telephone pole. I broke my collarbone, hairline fracture my hip, hairline fracture two ribs. A girl almost died. She was bleeding internally. She had punctured her liver, spent about a month in a hospital. Luckily, she did okay there. So there was a lot of events kind of around that time. And then about 16, my mom had moved in with my grandparents a couple of times over my life, but this is one that just kind of sticks out. And they really didn't want us there. My mom was still blind and running. I was a punk. I was no count at this point. I had been on and off probation. I already got caught with a half ounce of weed at 2 a.m. at 16 years old, tripping LSD, went to juvenile, got probation, all that fun stuff. And they wanted us out. My mom got her taxes. They kind of come up with that plan to finance the Clayton home. It was a brand new, you know, single wide trailer, but we put it in a park. And my mom used her tax money as the down payment. They just signed on it. Well, about a year in, my mom was working third shift at the Gap. She had started using cocaine pretty heavy. She had gotten fired. That turned into crack cocaine. And then that turned into, you know, there was no job. There was no... you know, there was no real security there. So she started, you know, using her body as a way to make profits. And, you know, at that point, she just pretty much went out there. About, I don't know, 9 months in, I'm close to 17. You know, I'm working the summer. You know, I'm working, I'm hustling, I'm doing whatever, you know, pretty much anything just to kind of even sometimes eat. Because right. I had so much pride. I could have called my grandmother. Don't ever think that they weren't always there for me. But I had so right. much pride that I would starve because I didn't need their help. I was angry with them for no reason, for all the wrong understandings. You know what I mean? I had been told my whole life they lied and took me away and all this stuff. And it wasn't true. So we find out about 9-10 months in to after losing the job that she had not been paying any bills. The lot rent was behind like 10 months. And the only reason it even got that far was the people that back then, the people that owned that trailer park, they all rent everything in cash. You know what I mean? So they like, you know, they were running money under the books. This is a hood trailer park. And so it got a while away, and then the mortgage on the trailer wasn't being paid, and we found out, and they're like, hey, basically, we were already in eviction. Like, you have to move the trailer out because you own it, and y'all got to go. My at the time, I had went to Kentucky Kingdom. My girlfriend at the time, we were young. I was like, look, I got to get out of here. I took whatever money I had. I was cutting grass at Metro Parks for $2.16 a week at that time. And we went to Kentucky Kingdom. We was going to spend like 4 days. When I came home that Friday, I was going to take a shower and the electricity was off.
Oh, I was going to ask if the place was gone. Like,
well, my mom's like, just give me the money and I'll go pay it. And I said, I'm not giving you the money. My mom, basically, she punched me in the nose. It was the only time I ever even did anything. I picked her up, carried her by her arms, took her down the hallway and threw her in the bathtub, told her, don't ever put her hands on me again. Da, da, da. It's not something I'm proud of. So that took place. I left. I went to my grandparents. I didn't even tell them. I just asked my granddad, can I please use your shower? Why ain't you got a shower? I said, well, we ain't got no electricity. I prefer to take a warm shower. I just got off work. I've been cutting grass all day, and then we're going out of town. Okay, son. All right. Went out of town. I think we stayed like 2 extra days. I didn't want to come back.
Well, of course not.
Came back, and the power was still off. And it was, you know, dead summer. And the all the meat in the freezer had unthawed, and was the blood was pouring down the fridge. And so it smelled like really like dead meat the whole place. She's sitting in the chair with the screen door open, and she's just crying. And I'm like, Mama, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do? And it was an every night thing to where we were best friends. She would come in trash 2 a.m. I love you so much. You know, you're everything to me. And then 9 a.m, she's kicking my door literally off the hinges, or 6 a.m, you know, lazy mother, just like your fucking daddy, And I'm just like, ah, God, Mama, just, you know, like, and so I'm using more and more drugs just to kill that, just to kill the process. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when I got back, that was like that. And I went back to my grandparents. I really didn't have an option. I didn't have enough money to really like get it all together. I was still a kid. You're still a kid at 17.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was like a nice little Catholic high school when I was 17 with my khakis and my Ralph Lauren polo on, you know?
Yeah, and that's how it's supposed to be, brother. Oh, man.
It is what it is.
I went to my grandparents. I'm like, look, this is the truth. I hadn't told them anything yet. I'm like, my mama's doing this. She's doing this. You know, it's bad. She would literally come home and had puked in the car where she took a hit.
No.
And it was so strong, she would vomit like rotten eggs. And then she actually asked me if I'd go clean it out. I wasn't going to clean it out. And it was left in there for months, like to the point the car just smelled like rotten eggs for a while. And, you know, I told my grandparents, look, the bills
were being
evicted. This is this. And my granddad looked at me. He's like, it's time to be a man. Do you want this trailer? If you want it, you can pay the bills and it's yours. But we're going to have to go get this straight with the park. And so we went down. My grandmother talked to him. They're like, look, if she's in here, we're evicting y'all in 10 days. You got to move the trailer and everything in 10 days. But it's going to just be him, it'll be okay. And I got accused for a while of kicking my own mother out on the streets. She ended up living in her car for about 3 months, probably two and a half, 3 months.
The rotten egg car?
Yeah. And, you know, it had gotten to the point where right before that, she got my friend to take her to Opryland Hotel to meet a guy, and specifically told me, and I'm her son, you know, I want to go rob this guy. I'm going to act like I'm going to sleep with him. I'm going to rob him. He's always got good money. And when we leave, I'll have some money. And I told him, don't participate. And he still did. And that's okay. We were young. We were punks. So, you know, I got my own spot, and, you know, just, I was doing floors. I had done floors right before I worked.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how did you pay for the place?
Yeah. So I was working a full-time job at Parks when that all went down, which is like seasonal cutting grass. And then, like right in the middle of that transition, I also had went to school with a girl, and I told her, I said, I need a real, like $200 a week. That's not going to cut it. Literally taking my check, buying drugs, flipping it so I could make money, so I could buy groceries and have bill money and be all right. So, this girl I knew, she's passed away as well. Her uncle, needed a laborer for a flooring company. And, so I went to work with him almost immediately. $40 a day cash, but he's like, I'll pay you 70 on Saturday and Sunday. So I ended up making like $300-$400 a week. That was almost double the money. Stayed with him a year and a half. So probably this might have been like 18 and a half ish. Got in with another guy. He paid me $70 a day and then $150 on the weekend. So I started making $500-$700 a week. I was still flipping it all, buying anything stolen I could, flipping it, buying the drugs, flipping it. Whatever I could, my door was kind of just revolving. I had an old friend. He moved in 2 trailers up. Next thing I know, you know, we're moving, you know, substantial amounts of marijuana, whatever. You know, I was a kid. I was stupid. And I got set up, pistol whipped.
Oh, no.
About 19. And, you know, that wasn't good. I've got all this mixed anger, and I'm just ready to let somebody have it.
Well, right.
And the streets and the devil were feeding my mind, pushing me to a point to actually take a human life is what was really happening. I see it in hindsight now. And a couple months later, my girlfriend's best friend called, but my girlfriend lived in Smyrna at the time, and they show up. And that's when I got pistol whipped. Then a couple months later, that her buddy set me up. 2 guys with pistols. And
so your own girlfriend had her buddy set you up.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. So it wasn't her, but her best friend did. So 2 months later, long story short, some stuff was weird. Somebody come to my door. I felt real uncomfortable about it. I went and got my pistol that my granddad had given me because I got pistol whipped. And I told him, you know, he's like, well, you need a gun, son. And I'm like, well, all right. Oh, so I took it. I shot the guy in the stomach. He ran off. I did call the cops. I knew that if he died, it was going to be a bigger problem trying to cover up a bunch of lies. So I just told him, hey, look, this guy was trying to rob me. I shot him. They brought the bird out, you know, helicopter, probably 10-12 cars. They looked at it. They said, you didn't shoot him. You know, you sure you got him? I said, man, I'm telling you, he grunted. I got him. I watched him. Anyways, my hunting buddy's like, dude, I can shoot a deer and he won't bleed for 100 yards. He said, if he had a sweatshirt and a hoodie on, he might not have bled till he got back to the car. So anyways, about 2 months later, I knew who was robbing me, and I knew the girlfriend. I went to kindergarten with her. Well, when her last name, I got home back then, young folks, we had something called caller ID.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That caller ID would tell you who called for when you finally got home to be able
unless
to
unless you
phone
hit
call.
*69 or *67 or whatever it was.
And that name was on the caller ID. I'm like, I know who this is because I knew that was his girlfriend. Well, she proceeds to tell me I shot him. I said, how do you get away with it? Because the cops told me, they said, we're going to put a notice out if anybody comes in with a gunshot and we'll know who it is. He went to the Metro General and told him he was in a whole other side of town and somebody shot him in a drive-by. And she said, but they had to cut him from his hip to his armpit and that he was bleeding internally and the bullet was stuck in his liver. And they did save his life, thank God. And that she told me just to be careful that they would, a big group, you know, they were rolling 7, 8, 9 deep all the time and partying. And that's all they done was what they did and
holy
said, you know,
oh,
they're coming. Just be careful. And so life went on by. I had gotten in a lot of other trouble. I had started really getting angry. I got a DUI. My second offense when I was about 19 or 20. A lot of aggravated assault type charges with fighting men and doing stuff and just being really stupid. And they basically told me, you know, you got to go. I think I was about 20. We found a park in Goodlettsville, moved the trailer there. It was like $3,000 to move it. And then all the other extra expenses. And, you know, this is all my grandmother and trying to help me out, trying to teach me, you know, to be a man. And I get out there and almost immediately I would go to the auction and buy cars and flip them also. And while running my, at that point at 19, I started my own flooring business and ran a little ad in the Thrifty Nickel. So I was doing that.
The Thrifty Nickel.
Yeah,
I remember the Thrifty Nickel.
It's American Classifieds online, but it used to be the Thrifty Nickel. It's like a $50 ad, and it kept me busy. I made, you know, $1,500, $2,000 a month starting out, and it was, and did that, and then I hustled, and then I bought cars at the auction. I sold this guy a car. Well, what I would do is do it on owner finance. I would sell it, so instead of selling it for $1,000 for what it was worth, I would sell it for $1,750. I paid $500 at the auction, but I'd sell it for $1,750 on a note, and I would get $600 down, so I got all my money back, and then I would make money on the note, just like Corey likes to do on his houses.
I was going to say, that's some roughneck to real estate right there.
And, you know, and something happened. We had some crosswords after, you know, the deal was in motion, and there was a little disrespect. I was drinking. I was out, and I was just angry. I was mad at life. I was mad at people. I felt like everybody was out to get me, which was not the truth. That was just a lie.
Substances do that too, man.
Yeah, we got into it in the parking lot. I had a broke hand from punching a wall until I found a 2x4. I compound fractured my hand and was in a splint. So I really couldn't fight him. And I went inside. I got my gun. I come outside. I started shooting. I was in Goodlettsville. I had only lived there two and a half months. The whole police force is there.
Oh, shit.
I go to jail. Aggravated assault with a deadly weapon with intent to do bodily harm. 5 years minimum. By the grace of God, you know, he didn't show up for court. And we went to court 4 or 5 times until they finally threw it out. They wanted to charge me. I had enough history behind me that, you know, God was looking out. So, around this same time, we knew we were pregnant. So I was pregnant with my first child, and me and the mother separated. We felt like it was the best thing to do. And about a month and a half later, the mom calls me and tells me, "You better come get this bitch." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, "Well, she's pregnant. You better come get this bitch." So that's how I found out I was going to be a dad. And,
wow.
So we stayed separated. I was very much in communication. All the baby stuff was handled between family and what I could do. And we were prepared. We had the baby. I fell in love. In pure love. And,
well, of course.
Pure love, brother. I see you, enjoy that all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody has their own path, so it's interesting to hear this perspective.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We were at the hospital, and I told her, I said, "Please bring my baby home. Let's try to make this work." And you know, we just weren't on the same wavelength. We met when I was 18, 17 and a half. She was 16, and we didn't grow together, and eventually separated a couple of times. We got back together. I did make some mistakes. Absolutely. We got pregnant again, and believe it or not, we were separated again. And about 4 months into that separation, she called and said, "I'm pregnant again." And
wow,
I didn't go back. Well, later that year, you know, I've done got 2 DUIs, rehab for the second offense DUI, time in jail for the 45 days. And then so I took the 2017 in jail and the 30 in rehab or whatever, 28 in rehab. And counseling was what started unlocking the counseling from the rehab. Was what started unlocking a lot of understanding.
Of how it was working in your brain.
Right. So that I could understand how to find peace. And how to be a person that my kids could grow up to be proud of. And you know, there was a lot of self-identification. You know what I mean? You got to really kind of go through some stuff. And then you're still making mistakes as you're learning, because it doesn't perfect in a day.
Well, no.
And so I get out of there, and then a couple years, and then I'm trying to work it out, and then we separate, and then 4 months later, she's pregnant again with our second child. And we stayed separated. And then, I don't know, 7-8 months later, I met Tiffany. And I told her, we went out, we watched a movie, did actually normal adult stuff instead of just all the chaos. We talked, we had a dinner and then went to the movie, and I just explained, you know, look, I do have a kid on the way. I have a 7-year-old, and when this finally goes down, she was okay as long as we separated and I was still around and somewhat available.
Right. But
when it came apparent that I wasn't coming back, the maturity really showed, and I was just ready to do right by my kids. And so I didn't see him for a couple of months. There was plenty of kind of mind games. Oh yeah, you can come get them. And then the day I could come get them, I couldn't get them. And so I finally kind of had no choice.
You see that sometimes.
All the time, dude. They unfortunately, her maturity level wouldn't allow her to grow past our problems,
right?
And do what was right for the kids.
Hmm.
And we met in we met initially in like June, and then we kind of hung out in like August, and then we kind of was together by September. And about December, I filed for custody. That ended up being about a 2.5-year battle in court.
Yeah, because you just posted about this whole thing concluding like a month or two ago, right?
Yeah, yes, sir. Yeah, I had the custody part of that, and then you know, she just continued to like actually go down a worse road. And so then what happened was I'm sorry, brother. And this is in no way to bash the mom.
Well, no.
But we weren't growing at the same pace, and it just wasn't good anymore. It wasn't healthy. It wasn't good for the girl or the new baby. And so by the time we had that 2.5-year fight in court, and then what started happening was people were calling me like 2015, that summer to that start of August, which was Paige's school year, and then to like November, they had actually moved like 7 times. She had actually set about a 10-by-10-foot pile of my clothes on fire in the trailer park. The trailer was completely paid off. I was letting her stay there, pay all the bills, and let her raise the kids.
Same old trailer?
She got on her feet. Say that again.
The same trailer from back in the day?
Yeah. It was paid off. And, you know, I worked things out, and I calmed down. I grew up a lot. And me and the owner actually got closer. But the day that all happened, he was ready to kick my ass. He's like, dude, you know, my insurance is fixing to blow up. You're out here shooting a gun in the middle of the street. He's like, are you smoking crack? I mean, literally. And I was just that angry.
Right.
I was that bad. And so she, you know, of course, didn't have anywhere to stay. And I found out because everywhere she would go, including one of her boyfriends, would then call me. And from a very transparent place, say, Craig, I don't know what y'all got going on, but you have got to get custody of these girls.
Damn.
Like, it's getting bad. There may be some heroin involved with the mother. Like, it got real bad. Mm. And it was multiple, like 7 or 8 people. The mother of my ex called and said, those kids belong with y'all.
Yikes.
So then I filed for emergency custody. We spent about another year and a half fighting in court for that, just to kind of prove, because a man does not have much of a benefit in the court system. And since then, they haven't heard since the day the court made the judgment. They have not heard, seen, text, talked to, or anything from mom for about 3.5 years. So that's why when you see like posts like, Tiffany, you're our hero, I really mean it. She stepped up to be mom.
Wow.
She's raised Sadie ever since she was 6 months, which was the newest that I was pregnant with when we were separated mm-hmm. the last time. And then it took a long time for Paige to come around. She was told a lot of lies, and they're really close, and I can't be more thankful, man. But
yeah, that's beautiful. Wow. So,
There's so much more depth to this, and the
book, I'm sure that there is.
Yeah, the book's going to be called Instant Empire. I'm just to clarify with my audience, and then I want any questions or anything. I actually shared that opportunity almost probably a year and a half ago. I'm going to be transparent. I had a mastermind coach at the time that was telling me that the book would make me have a position of authority, which I do respect and agree and understand that logic.
Yeah.
But when I started my business path and started wanting to know that I wanted to grow around 23, 24, I always said, I want to write a book on this.
Mm-hmm.
When I make it through this and I make it to the vision that God gave me, I want to write a book so that people know what's possible. And so I always wanted to do it. But the mentor at the time, his advice was turn it into monetary gain, which is all good and fine in the right setting. But it was too much
right.
of a rush. It wouldn't have been right. And so that's why it was announced but hasn't been completed. And I want to do it in the right timing so that it's quality content.
Well, yeah, you want to deliver the best product to people. And plus, at the end of the day, the better the product is, the better result you're going to get from the product. Sometimes,
absolutely.
And we talked about this too, you push and you push and you push and you push so hard in one direction that you're beating your head against the wall. And we're really, you just need to scoot over just a little bit, and that's where you're going to break through.
One step at a time.
That's just, Tim Allred commented, but I mean, it is heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's like, it's crazy the turnaround. So when did you get into running a real estate business, and how did that all transpire?
Yes, sir. So the flooring business, what I realized was, and not in a negative way, I watched my boss. We were close. We're still close. He's actually local up here in Gallatin, the guy I first started in floors with. And I wasn't making much money, but I seen, he would brag. I was young. I was 16 and a half, 17, da-da-da. He's like, look at that. And he'd make, back then, this is, late 90s, very early 2000, and he's making $3,000 to $5,000 a week, and me, Bobby, and a couple other guys would actually go do the job.
Not a bad day.
He just ran the operations, which I respected him, but I just knew the potential. I'm like, he got to where within 6 months from knowing nothing to he could literally drop me off on a job. I could knock the job out. He'd come back at the end of the day, pick me up, and the customer multiple times. I'm not saying this. I just, if everything happens for a reason, I would even overhear the customer. I don't know where you got that young man, but you should keep him because he's really good. And I just thought, if I put me a little ad out, even if I do like one, two little small jobs a month, I can make what I'm making for him and not work 15 hours a day to do it. I mean, we were literally leaving at 6 a.m. and not leaving the job till 7 p.m, getting home at 8:39 and do it again. And that was for $40 a day. I was making literally $350 to $450 an hour, and that's okay. So I started the ad. I worked for Joey for a little while, and then I started my own. I told him, I'm gonna go out by one tool a week until I got. And he laughed at me. Oh, Greg, he always called me Greg on purpose. You're gonna start your own business, and so I did.
So you started doing floors.
First job.
So you started doing floors. Cool.
Yes, sir. Creative floors. And my first job I sold, and I was super stoked, man. It was like $4,500 labor and material. And, you know, so it was like $2,500. I knew we could do it in like 4 days. I paid my friend, which was good money for him, $200 a day. And I made really good. My granddad had went out. I told him what I was doing, went to a little car lot, bought me a 1979 Ford van with the captain's seat. So I thought it was really actually badass because the whole seats, you could swivel all the way around.
I had an old green Dodge Ram there for a long time, and it was awesome.
Yeah, with the captain chair. If you don't lock it in while you're driving, it'll turn on you.
Yeah, and then it had the pull-out couch in the back, too.
Yeah, and all the plush.
It was nice.
So we took all the seats out, made it a work van, got a few tools that they helped me with, and I went to go do my first job. And back then in Nashville, I don't even know if that's the flooring distribution, but it was BMI. It was BPI, Better Products Incorporated. Pulling into the parking lot, my motor blows up in my van.
Oh, first no. Time.
So I'm like, oh, shit. So I get out. I'm like, you know, back then I couldn't control my emotions. I'm mad. Life sucks. Everything's over with.
Right.
I called my girlfriend at the time. I had a 1988 Crown Vic. I love that car. You know, box body, plush, like the couch front seat. So it was super comfortable. And I called her and I'm like, hey, you know, look, this is what just happened. Can you please come get us? We're going to go get P's truck. And he's going to let me use it for $100 a day to get back and forth, transporting all the materials and getting us to the job and back. I'm like, well, you don't know this area good, so I'm going to walk. And it was about 2.5 miles. And I said, I'll walk to Fessler's Lane right on the interstate where Daly's Market is, a big shell right there. And I said, if you'll just come to there, we'll be there. So we're walking, we get there, and it's like an hour goes by. Well, we young folks, we didn't have any cell phones.
Right.
So I don't know what's going on. So eventually I go to the payphone. I call my granddad. I'm like, I don't know what happened. Maybe she got lost. I was like, can you please just come pick us up so I can go get this job started? And the first thing come out of his mouth, this old man, he, I bet you done totaled your damn car out. And I'm like, why would you say that? There's no way that's going to happen today.
No.
We're looking across the street, and on the exit ramp, there's a semi. And it's got a bunch of pylons next to it. And it's like pulled over to the side and there's two cop cars. My granddad gets there to pick us up. We pull into the trailer park and I notice the whole side of my car is totaled out. She pulled into that semi and totaled the whole side of my car out. So that was day one. That was my first job. So if anybody's watching this and you're having opposition, it's just part of it. It's not personal. It's testing you to teach you the skills and the abilities to rise above so that you have the characteristics to handle a $100,000 transaction, a $500,000 transaction. $250,000 annual contract to work with someone to do their marketing. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it's pressure. And then, you know, sometimes payments ain't on time. And how do you micromanage that? How do you move that around? And then do you trust the people? Or do you blow your top? I can't believe you didn't pay me on the first. And those are the things these pressures are teaching you so that you're balanced and you're well-rounded, so that you can conduct real business.
And I call that counterpunching. I call it counterpunching. I'm an offensive player, so I like to go, 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 go. But sometimes when I hit the wall a couple times, if you hit it again, your head's really going to hurt because it already hurts. Yep. So you got to sidestep, and then you can go again. Because I'm not really a defensive player. I'm way more of an offensive player. And so I'm go, 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 beat your head against the wall enough times. And you're like, all right, well, I got to sidestep over here and then I can get through or get around or whatever. And like you said, we talked about it before in that episode. I think it was the first episode. I mean, those obstacles are going to be there.
Yeah. Well, it taught, you know, like what you just said, you said you were offense. I would beg to say that 99.99999% of anyone aspiring to start a business and be an entrepreneur, they're designed that way. And what the opposition is doing is teaching us to understand the defense. Because right. we're built with that offense.
Right.
And that's the part we don't think matters and we don't care about, especially in the beginning. It's like, I need defense. I'm just going to run out here and make $1 million.
You just want to put up points.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to learn how to be a teammate. You got to learn how to be accountable. All these factors that play into to finding a place of balance, and then that balance then brings forth those fruits of success.
Right. And it's so funny. And I always use this dude as an example because, again, we talk about the cliches being true. You know, everybody's like, well, you miss, you know, 100% of the shots you don't take. And it's like the old Wayne Gretzky quote, which is an offensive quote. But what people don't right. understand is that while Wayne Gretzky's the highest goal scorer ever in the history of the NHL, he's also the assists leader. And he has like 2.5 times as many assists as he did goals. I don't know what the exact stat is, but I have looked it up. If he had, I don't know, if he had 2,000 goals, he had 4,500 assists. If he had 1,000 goals, he had 2,500 assists. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but Wayne Gretzky led in both of those categories because he was a playmaker. He would rather give you the puck and you score and win the game than try and take all the glory.
And that comes with experience. I bet if we could pull Wayne Gretzky in right now, he would say that he didn't start his career out that way. It took time and discipline and understanding. He took too many shots.
Missing shots. Right.
You know what I mean? To say, hey, I need to share this. I need to pass this when needed.
And if I can draw them in, the guy's wide open.
That's right. And then, hey, we're all winning.
So, right.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, it's a process.
Yep, it is. It is. So you started with a flooring company. And then how did that turn into investing? You eventually got into realizing that you could make more money off the whole property than just doing the floor.
Well, no. So,
I don't know.
At that point, I think I said this before and I'm just throwing it out there, but I remember, believe this or not, this is how good God is. And when I made those flooring cards, I had the flooring business. I met someone actually through family that worked for Farmers Insurance. They had been trying to recruit me for like a year. And they're like, hey, you know, bring your workman's comp insurance, general liability over here. We can save you some money. Farmers is great. You know, they're good on their claims, da, da, da. And I she literally every little family reunion. And I finally was like, all right, I'll go visit her in the office. I did. We sat down. We spent a little time talking about the business and what my aspirations were. And she told me, she said, I know a guy. And about 10 days later, early morning, I get a random call. Hey, Craig, this is such and such. I work with White House Serpro. And what they do is all the water and fire remediation and restoration for you know, either commercial, residential. They've got that market, you know, definitely a large market share of that.
Right.
And he said, da-da-da, I've got a demo guy. He said, I talked to Tanya. She said, you're legit. You're set up. You're ready to go. He's like, do you think you can handle some demo work? Well, I could do anything.
I've done some demo work. It's actually kind of it's like stress relief, beating the shit out of a toilet with a hammer.
Well, but yeah, well, absolutely. Tearing some walls out.
I'm just saying.
Fulfilling, you know, in the right way. You get to get a little aggression out and not get in trouble.
Feels good.
But basically, that mindset at that time, I was just like, I'll take on any new work I can to grow so that I can stabilize this.
Right.
And, I know it sounds crazy and this may not be the way it needs to work. That's why I kind of didn't share his name, but he's like, look, I pay this crew $4,500 for every house they demo. He's like, can you do it? And I said, yes, sir. When do I need to be there? He said, can you start today? He told me where the keys were. I called enough people that I'd always gave him work in my little circle.
Damn.
We were there the same day by 4 p.m. By 12 p.m. next day I was calling him, telling him we were complete.
Of course.
He gave me another demo job in Ashland City and then turned around and said, give me a quote to put that whole house you just demoed back together. Literally, I get to the fire demo. He said, while you're at it, give me a quote to put that whole burnt house back together. So I went from just no extra, really a bunch
right.
of income and just scratching and fighting to get flooring jobs to about a quarter. It was about $200,000 worth of work that I received in 5 days.
Wow.
Within 5 days, because of completing the two demos, we knocked those out in that week. And then start money to get materials, I had collected probably $35,000 in 5 days. And
wow.
I was rich. I mean, it was over with. Everything was coming together. But even then, I believe that I just wasn't the person that would ever be able to be in real estate. I didn't think that that belonged to me. I thought that that was for other folks.
Right.
And, when I went and got my cards made for Creative Floors and Remodel, when I changed the business name and started advertising to do actual remodel work because I was comfortable with it at that point.
Right.
I also had some business cards made that I'll send you a screenshot later. And it actually says Up Top Investments. And this was probably in like 2003, 2004, and I got into real estate in 2015.
Wow, so, it's really taken off for you then, like in a few years.
You know, but it's...
Oh, no. Craig, your thing died. So, yeah, maybe his Skype just died. I'm going to call him back. We'll just do a part two. You know, shit happens. What was it, like an hour? So, yeah, there you go.